Right now, like at this very second, millions of dollars of goods are just barreling down Highway 401 between Toronto and Montreal.
Oh, yeah. It literally never stops.
Right. And we rarely think about it when we're, stuck in traffic next to one of those massive 18-wheelers. But if just one of those trucks gets delayed, I mean, a factory floor 100 miles away might actually have to shut down its assembly line.
Exactly. Or a major retail launch could completely fail. Or even worse, a hospital might not get a really critical shipment of surgical monitors. It's incredibly high stakes, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
It really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the ultimate invisible engine. You really only notice supply chain logistics when something breaks. It's like when you get a paper cut or your foot falls asleep, to use a biological analogy.
That is a great way to put it, because when that economic blood is flowing perfectly between Toronto and Montreal, it just looks like everyday boring traffic to the rest of us.
Precisely. You don't even see the complexity.
Well, today, we're pulling back the curtain on that invisible engine. We actually got our hands on a really comprehensive guide from Freightcom, and it just breaks down the granular logistics of this entire Toronto to Montreal freight corridor.
It's a fantastic resource, honestly.
It really is. So our mission here today is simple. Whether you're an entrepreneur trying to, scale up an e-commerce brand, or a warehouse manager looking for efficiencies, or honestly, if you're just intensely curious about how that shiny new gadget actually arrived on your doorstep, we're going to extract the exact strategies you need to cut shipping costs and avoid massive logistical disasters.
Which is something every business owner needs right now.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, let's unpack this. We're looking at a highway system connecting Canada's two largest economic hubs. The sheer physical scale of the goods moving across this asphalt is just staggering.
It really is. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this specific route is the fundamental lifeblood for multiple massive sectors. We're talking about automotive components moving between manufacturing plants, raw materials for food and beverage companies.
Hazardous materials too,
Oh,
right?
yeah, hazardous materials, critical healthcare supplies. It is a highly interconnected web. Like a manufacturer in Montreal might be waiting on a very specific valve from Toronto just to finish a machine that's scheduled to be loaded onto a ship the very next day.
Wow.
Yeah, the tolerances for error there are just razor thin.
Which actually makes the transit times they quote in the source material wild to me. The guide states that most shipments on this route take exactly 1 to 3 business days.
Yep, 1 to 3 days.
A reliable 1 to 3 day window. Now, I mean, I drive on these highways. I see the construction. I see the traffic. I'm looking at this claim and thinking, wait, if this corridor is the main artery and thousands of massive trucks are crowding onto it every single day, shouldn't the sheer volume of traffic create constant grinding bottlenecks?
You would think so, right?
Yeah. I mean, how does having that much freight on the road guarantee a fast delivery?
Well, it's kind of a brilliant paradox in logistics. Instinctively, we assume more volume means slower movement, like, rush hour in a city center.
Exactly, bumper to bumper.
Right. But freight networks operate on a completely different set of physical rules. In commercial shipping, massive volume is the exact mechanism that creates blistering speed.
Wait, really? Because the trucks don't have to wait around to be filled.
Precisely. Just think about the alternative for a second. Imagine a shipping terminal in a very small town somewhere. A carrier there might only receive, say, 2 or 3 pallets of goods heading to Montreal in a given week.
Okay, yeah.
Well, a carrier cannot profitably drive a 53-foot trailer 400 miles if it's mostly empty. So that freight just sits on the concrete floor for days, literally just waiting for more local businesses to drop off shipments until the truck is finally full enough to justify burning the diesel.
Oh, I see. So the lack of volume creates a massive wait time.
Exactly.
Ah, so on the Toronto-Montreal route, the terminals are basically operating at hyperspeed.
They literally never stop. The demand is so immense that a trailer parked at a Toronto dock is filled to the brim in a matter of hours, and that immediate capacity triggers incredibly frequent carrier departures.
So the truck is on the road almost immediately.
Yes. Your freight isn't gathering dust in a warehouse, it's loaded and moving almost instantly. That massive sustained demand funds a highly optimized infrastructure of cross-docking terminals, overnight relay drivers, you name it. The sheer gravity of the market just pulls everything along faster.
That makes so much sense. So the volume basically eliminates the waiting game. that kind of shifts the burden back onto the shipper, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
Because if the highway itself is optimized to hit that 1 to 3 day window,
yeah,
your job as the business owner is to figure out what kind of vehicle you actually need to tap into that speed without, you know, blowing your entire operating budget.
Right.
And the guide lays out 4 main options. And reading through it, it really feels like playing logistics Tetris.
Logistics Tetris is honestly the perfect way to look at it. You have a physical object and you need to match it to the exact right geometric and economic space in the supply chain.
Right.
So the first and most familiar option is parcel shipping.
Which is pretty straightforward, right? Like lightweight boxes, small e-commerce packages. Basically, if I can pick it up with my own 2 hands and carry it up my driveway, it's going parcel.
Exactly. And that's usually handled by the major couriers you see driving around every day. But, you know, a business isn't going to ship 50 boxes of heavy machinery components via parcel courier.
Oh, man, the cost on that would be insane.
The individual weight limits and per box costs would bankrupt them. That requires stepping up to LTL or less than truckload shipping.
Right. And I found the mechanics of LTL so fascinating. The guide defines this as the sweet spot for shipments of roughly 1 to 6 pallets weighing anywhere from like 150 to about 15,000 pounds.
Yep, that's the general zone.
So you essentially have too much stuff for a parcel van, but nowhere near enough stuff to fill an entire 53-foot transport truck. So LTL is basically a rideshare carpool for your pallets.
I love that. It is the ultimate industrial carpool. You're renting a specific portion of the trailer's floor space, and you share the physical trailer.
They're costs, I assume.
Exactly. You split the fuel and labor costs with 3 or 4 other businesses whose freight is moving along that same Toronto to Montreal route.
But because it's a carpool, there's a catch, right? I mean, just like an Uber pool, the driver doesn't just go straight from your house to your destination. They have to stop, pick other people up, maybe drop someone else off. So LTL freight gets handled a lot more.
It does. It goes through what they call the hub and spoke system. So your LTL pallet is picked up by a local truck, driven to a central terminal, unloaded with a forklift, sorted, and then reloaded onto the main long-haul truck heading to Montreal.
That's a lot of moving parts.
And then the whole process repeats in reverse at the destination. So it's incredibly cost-effective, but your freight is being physically moved on and off docks multiple times.
Right. Which leads us directly to the third option, which is FTL, or full truckload. To stick with the analogy we're using, if LTL is the rideshare carpool, FTL is basically hiring a private limo.
Pretty much, yeah.
You're buying the entire truck, closing the doors in Toronto, and they don't open again until the truck hits the loading dock in Montreal. You wouldn't hire a limo for 1 box of electronics, and you wouldn't try to cram a factory engine into a carpool.
Exactly. And usually shippers book FTL when they just have 10 or more pallets. They simply have enough sheer volume to max out the trailer. But volume isn't the only reason you book the limo.
No.
FTL is frequently used for highly fragile, high-value goods or, you know, strict temperature-controlled shipments.
Because you eliminate all that forklift handling at those intermediate terminals we just talked about.
Precisely. I mean, if you're shipping $2 million worth of sensitive laboratory equipment, you do not want it taken off a truck and left on a busy terminal dock for 4 hours in the middle of the night while another truck backs in.
Yeah, that sounds like a disaster waiting to happen.
You pay a premium for FTL to drastically reduce that risk profile. The freight is handled once at the origin and once at the destination.
You match the ride to the risk. I like that. And then the final category is expedited freight, which is essentially just throwing money at the clock.
Pretty much.
Like when 1 to 3 days is just too slow, you pay a massive premium to get an emergency part or medical device delivered same day or next day.
Which is sometimes totally necessary.
Absolutely. Okay, so you've picked your vessel, you've chosen the limo or the carpool. This brings us to the actual bill. How does the carrier calculate what you owe? Because looking through the source material, the physical distance between the two cities is really just a baseline.
Yeah, distance is just the canvas, really. The actual cost is painted by a dozen different variables.
Like what?
Well, you have raw weight, obviously. You have fluctuating fuel surcharges tied to global oil prices. The physical dimensions matter. Even the destination type dramatically alters the price.
Wait, the type of destination, like a warehouse versus a house?
Exactly. Huh. Backing a trailer up to a commercial warehouse with a raised loading dock takes like 5 minutes.
Hmm.
But navigating that same 53-foot truck into a residential neighborhood, dodging low-hanging oak trees and parked cars.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
It's a highly inefficient nightmare for a carrier. So they charge a serious premium for the headache.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But the most treacherous part of this math, specifically for that LTL rideshare option, is this concept of freight class. The guide highlights this as a major stumbling block for a lot of people.
Yeah.
It isn't just about throwing your pallet on the scale, is it?
Not at all. Freight class is based on the National Motor Freight Classification System.
Mm-hmm.
It's this standardized matrix used by carriers across North America to categorize literally every physical object you could possibly ship.
Okay.
And it's based on four pillars: density, handling requirements, liability, and stowability.
Okay, I actually want to test this out with a riddle. I was thinking about this earlier. Let's say I'm a manufacturer in Toronto.
All right, go for it.
And I have two separate shipments going to Montreal. Shipment A is a heavy, highly dense pallet of solid steel automotive gears.
Okay, steel gears.
Yep. And shipment B is a massive, extremely lightweight pallet of fully assembled wicker outdoor furniture.
Got it.
Now they weigh the exact same amount on the scale. Which one hurts my wallet more?
What's fascinating here is that the human brain immediately links heavy weight with high cost. So people instinctively assume the solid steel gears will cost a fortune.
Right, because it's solid steel.
But the answer is actually the wicker furniture, and honestly, it isn't even close. The lightweight furniture will have a dramatically higher freight class, making it significantly more expensive to ship.
Because I'm essentially forcing the carrier to transport empty air.
That is the core of it. We have to remember that a truck trailer is a finite geometric box. A carrier's entire business model relies on maximizing every square inch of that box.
Right.
The steel gears are dense and compact, right? They sit neatly in a corner, leaving tons of space around them for the carrier to load other paying customers' freight.
But the wicker furniture takes up like half the trailer.
And worse, it has terrible stowability.
Stowability.
Yeah, stowability is basically how easily your freight can be stacked and arranged alongside other cargo. Wicker furniture is fragile and awkwardly shaped. You absolutely cannot safely stack a heavy crate of engine parts on top of a wicker chair.
Oh, obviously not. It would just crush it.
Right. So not only are you taking up floor space, you are completely burning the vertical space above your pallet all the way up to the ceiling. The carrier cannot sell that space to anyone else. Therefore, the freight class system ensures that you pay for all the empty air you are wasting.
Wow. So as a business owner, I am paying for geometry just as much as gravity. That completely changes how you have to approach logistics.
It really does.
And knowing the math behind freight class is vital, but the guide issues a pretty stark warning here. They say if you don't physically prepare your freight to perfectly match that math, the carrier is going to penalize you hard.
Oh, yeah. The industry calls it reclassification, and it is a brutal trap. Shippers calculate their freight class perfectly on paper, but then their actual warehouse team does a terrible job physically packing the pallet.
Right. The guide stresses that good packaging literally lowers costs.
Yes.
And they highlight one cardinal sin, which is overhanging boxes.
Yes. Never, ever let your product hang over the wooden edge of the pallet. If a box hangs over by even a single inch, you've completely ruined the stowability.
Just one inch.
Just one inch. Because when the forklift driver inside the terminal tries to slide another pallet flush against yours to maximize space, they can't. That one inch overhang creates a dead gap. And honestly, it drastically increases the chance of your product getting crushed during transit.
And the carrier catches this, don't they?
Oh, absolutely they do. Terminals are equipped with automated dimensioning laser scanners now. So when your pallet rolls through, the lasers measure the absolute widest point.
Oh.
If you have an inch of overhang, the system recalculates the entire cubic volume of your shipment based on that little bulge. You instantly get bumped into a more expensive freight class, and the carrier just sends you a massive billing adjustment after the fact.
Man, so it all comes down to the paperwork perfectly matching the physical reality. Which brings us to the BOL, the Bill of Lading.
The most important document in shipping.
I really started looking at the BOL as a passport for your freight. Like, it's the primary legal document traveling with the goods. It contains the shipper and receiver info, the exact weight, the dimensions, the calculated freight class, and any special instructions.
That's exactly what it is.
Now, if I travel internationally and the details on my passport, you know, my height, my name, if they don't perfectly match the physical human standing at the border crossing, yeah. I am in serious trouble.
Yeah, you are getting pulled into a very uncomfortable room for a few hours.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's the exact same mechanism with freight. If your pallet arrives at the terminal and the laser scanner says it's 49 inches wide, but your passport, the BOL, claims it's 48 inches wide, you get stopped at the border. You get hit with those reclassification fees.
And those discrepancies are also where accessorial charges can just bleed a company dry.
Accessorial charges.
Yeah, accessorials are fees for extra services that go beyond just driving from dock to dock. For example, if your receiver in Montreal does not have a raised loading dock, the truck driver needs a mechanical lift gate on the back of the trailer to lower the pallet down to the street.
Okay, so if I forget to check the liftgate required box on the BOL passport, what actually happens on the ground?
Pure chaos.
Really?
Yeah. The driver arrives in a standard trailer. They open the doors, look down at the street 4 feet below, and realize there is no physical way to get 2,000 pounds of cargo off the truck. The driver is now stuck.
Oh, geez.
They're losing time on their heavily regulated hours of service log. They have to call dispatch, turn the massive truck around, drive the freight all the way back to the terminal, and schedule a completely new delivery for the next day on a specialized liftgate truck.
And let me guess, the carrier is going to make me pay for all that wasted time and diesel fuel.
Through the nose. You will be hit with redelivery fees, liftgate fees, administrative penalties, all because one little box wasn't checked on the bill of lading. It is all about declaring your needs up front so the carrier can send the right equipment the first time.
Okay, so let's construct the perfect scenario here. I chose the right carpool method. My warehouse packed a beautiful, perfectly flush pallet with zero overhang, and I filled out the BOL passport flawlessly. The freight is loaded. But once that truck leaves the dock and hits the 401, I'm suddenly at the mercy of the elements. Mother Nature and Murphy's Law.
Oh, completely. And that Toronto to Montreal corridor is notorious for throwing environmental curveballs that can just shatter that reliable 1 to 3 day window.
Winter's the obvious one, right? Snow squalls coming off Lake Ontario, black ice, freezing rain shutting down multiple lanes of the highway.
Winter definitely destroys transit schedules, but you also have to factor in the spring and summer construction season, which significantly reduces highway capacity.
Good point.
And then from a purely economic standpoint, you have the fourth quarter holiday crunch. Black Friday and Cyber Monday create such a massive surge in volume that carrier networks literally get physically maxed out. Finding space on a truck becomes incredibly difficult and very expensive.
Which makes visibility absolutely critical. The guide really emphasizes tracking updates from terminal to terminal and getting a POD.
Right. Proof of delivery. It's basically your ultimate legal receipt. The POD confirms the exact timestamp of arrival, the signature of the person who received it, and crucially, it notes any visible damage to the freight at the exact moment it came off the truck.
Now, I want to pose a scenario that I think a lot of newer business owners assume is true. Let's say I'm tracking my really expensive electronic shipment. I see there's a massive blizzard on the highway, and I get a notification that the carrier literally drove the truck into a snowy ditch.
Yeah.
My pallet is completely destroyed.
Okay, worst case scenario.
Right. But I'm not panicking, because carrier liability means if they break it, they buy it.
Right.
They owe me a check for the full retail value of my electronics.
This raises an important question, and it is arguably the most dangerous myth in the entire logistics industry.
Wait.
Carrier liability does not automatically cover the full value of your shipment. Not even close.
Wait, if their driver crashes the truck, how are they not on the hook for the damage?
Because they are a transportation company, not an insurance company. Carrier liability is dictated by heavily restricted terms, conditions, and federal transport regulations. Payouts are almost always based on a set dollar amount per pound of freight.
Per pound?
Yes. So, let's look at your electronics. You might be shipping a 20-pound box of microchips that are worth $50,000. But if the carrier's standard liability maxes out at $2 a pound, their legal obligation for completely destroying your $50,000 shipment is a check for $40.
$40? You're joking. That would literally bankrupt a small business.
I'm completely serious. It happens way more often than you'd think. If carriers had to assume the full retail risk of every high-value item on their trucks, shipping rates would just be astronomically high. No one could afford it.
Wow. So the liability really just covers a heavily regulated minimum.
Exactly. Which is why the source material explicitly stresses that if you are shipping high-value items, fragile goods, or custom inventory, you explicitly must purchase separate third-party freight insurance.
Got it.
Freight insurance covers the actual replacement value of the goods, regardless of whether the driver was at fault or, you know, an act of God caused the storm. You just cannot rely on baseline liability to protect your balance sheet.
That is a terrifying but honestly completely necessary realization. But taking a step back and looking at everything we've just discussed, I mean, juggling the LTL rideshares versus the STL limos, calculating stowability metrics to avoid the reclassification trap, making sure the BOL passport is flawless so a driver isn't stranded in a residential neighborhood.
A lot.
And then monitoring winter storm systems and decoding per pound insurance limitations. To be entirely honest, it sounds like an absolute logistical nightmare for a business owner who really just wants to manufacture a good product and sell it.
It really does.
Historically, how did companies even manage this chaos without having an entire floor of logistics experts?
Well, historically, they managed it pretty poorly. They used whiteboards, manual spreadsheets, and they spent hours on the phone calling 5 different trucking companies just to compare rates for a single pallet.
That sounds awful.
It was incredibly inefficient. And that is the exact friction point that modern solutions like FreightCom were built to eliminate.
Yeah, the guide introduces FreightCom as this overarching digital solution. Like, instead of calling those 5 different dispatchers, the platform integrates directly into the carrier's internal pricing engines.
Exactly. It creates a single, unified operational dashboard. A business owner just enters their pallet dimensions, weight, and postal codes once. Instantly, the software pulls back live, discounted rates from multiple vetted carriers.
That's so much easier.
It is. You can compare transit times, click to book the shipment, schedule the local pickup, automatically generate a flawless bill of lading, and track the freight all the way to Montreal.
And it works seamlessly in reverse, too, pulling supplies from Montreal back into Toronto. Here's where it gets really interesting to me, looking at the evolution of this whole industry. This software essentially democratizes logistics.
How do you mean?
Well, 10 or 15 years ago, only massive multinational corporations with dedicated supply chain departments had access to digital multi-carrier dashboards and heavily negotiated volume discounts.
Oh, absolutely.
But now, a 5-person e-commerce startup operating out of a leased warehouse has access to the exact same operational efficiency. It completely levels the playing field.
It totally removes the barrier to entry. You don't need a degree in supply chain management to avoid the accessorial traps or calculate freight classes anymore because the architecture of the software guides you to input the correct data right up front. It digitizes all those physical rules we just talked about.
So synthesizing everything we've pulled from this FreightCom deep dive today, the ultimate takeaway for anyone listening who moves physical goods is this. Treating your shipping logistics as an afterthought, you know, just throwing things in a box and hoping for the best, is actively draining your profit margins.
100%.
But if you take control of it, if you pack flush pallets to maximize geometry, if you really understand the risk profiles of LTL versus FTL, and if you leverage digital consolidation platforms to manage the paperwork, shipping transforms from a chaotic, frustrating expense into a massive competitive advantage.
You take a vulnerability and you engineer it into a strength. It's that simple. But before we finish up today, I actually want to leave you with one final thought about the future of this artery.
Ooh, okay. I'm all ears.
So we've spent this time breaking down how established terminals and multi-carrier platforms keep the Toronto to Montreal corridor running efficiently at that reliable 1 to 3 day window.
Right.
But consider the technological leap that is currently in development. Over the next decade, as AI-driven predictive logistics and fully autonomous driverless transport trucks begin to legally roll out onto Highway 401, how will these fundamental rules change?
Oh, wow. Because, I mean, an autonomous truck doesn't have an hours of service log. It doesn't need to pull over at a truck stop to sleep.
Exactly. It runs 24 hours a day without stopping. Will a route that has proudly maintained a 1 to 3 day standard for decades suddenly shrink to a matter of mere hours?
That would be insane.
And think about the costs. Will the entire math of freight class and accessorial charges completely flip when human labor costs and driver fatigue are just completely removed from the equation?
That changes everything.
It really does. It's something to seriously think about the next time you're passed by a transport truck in the fast lane. The physical asphalt might look the same, but the invisible engine is about to get a massive technological upgrade.
The economic blood flow is about to get a whole lot faster. And the next time your foot falls asleep, just remember the sheer amount of logistics keeping the rest of the system pumping. Keep questioning, keep exploring the mechanics behind the curtain, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.